You're listening to Red Nation Online.
Welcome to From the Black Hole, episode 100. On today's podcast, we welcome back former Canadian men's national team coach, Michael Findlay. To From the Black Hole. This is episode 100. I didn't know if we would ever make it to 100 episodes. It's our century episode, and I'm very lucky to have on a guest who has been on the podcast before. When he was on the podcast before, he was interim head coach of the men's national team, and he's also served as assistant coach of the men's national team, been involved in BC soccer for years. And I'm talking, of course, about Michael Findlay. Welcome back to the podcast, Michael.
Glad to be here. Glad to talk to my Prairie brothers and everybody else who's listening. And congratulations on the 100th episode. I mean, it's hard to get to those types of numbers in this day and age. So applause all around.
Yeah, well, I have to laugh a little bit because we record infrequently enough that several podcasts that I'm, you know, aware of and listen to from time to time who started after we did, significantly after we did, are way past 100 episodes. And we're... We were talking off air a moment ago about, and I was expressing to you that it's been my pleasure and my great luck and fortune, good fortune, to be able to talk to all the people that I've talked to on the various podcasts and interviews, yourself and others included. And, especially with all the exciting things that are happening in Canadian soccer right now. First and foremost, Canadian Premier League, which we'll get into in a little bit. But can you maybe take us back to, well, maybe not quite as far back as the last time we talked, because that was a long time ago now.
Yeah, it was.
But,
yeah.
You know, you were involved with the men's team program in, you know, very important roles, as obviously as interim head coach and as assistant coach, and you went through some things there. But since then, you've been doing some other things. Could you get us up to date on what you've been doing?
Yeah, I mean, it sort of evolved. You know, this is the first year that you know I am an out of contract coach, as they say. You know, the time I spent with the men's national team was some of the most glorious times for me from a professional's point of view. And as happens in professional football, you know, changes are made and coaches are you know, are tenuous at best.
Right.
Changes were made and at that level, and we move on. Since then, that was about March of this year. I guess it was March 1st, something like that. It's been a great time for me because I think it gave me an opportunity to sort of step back and look at football and look at where I was. And one of the things I noticed was, you know, the job, you know, drives you to a certain level and a certain commitment and enthusiasm and passion and depression and all the things that come along with it. And education is one of those areas that you sort of forget that you need to be consistent with and constant. And
right,
so
right.
The time now, I've spent a lot of time speaking to a lot of different people, both in football and out of football in other industries, looking for lessons and crossovers and best practices. I was lucky enough to be asked by Sportsnet 650 Radio in Vancouver to do some World Cup analysis during the World Cup, which was a really enjoyable time for me, both from a learning process, also because I got to see every game and you know, get a really good understanding of maybe tactically what was happening in the world, and really enjoyed that and that interaction with the public. And just recently I'm doing some consulting work with the CPL in their berth and in terms of some of the things they have to address, and so they were looking for some assistance there, and really looking at the opportunities that may come down the road. and trying to find a way and a pathway to get there. So that's kind of been my arena of activity in the last little while.
Yeah, busy still, of course. Yeah. I've got just picking up on something that you said there about education. I have to think that is going to play an incredibly large role in what's going to happen with the Canadian Premier League going forward. That if you're the kind of person that believes in the power of continually learning, right? I mean, I was an ex-teacher and lifelong learning was one of these buzzwords that some people embraced and other people maybe not so much or whatever, but everybody's got to be on an incredibly steep learning curve, I'm assuming. And so that's having that philosophy sounds like it's the right kind of philosophy for what you're doing.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think I completely agree with you. And I quite frankly, and I've been a very vocal proponent of the importance of education, football education in our country. I think we have an incredibly gifted group of facilitators that are available to us. I do find it frustrating at times, though, that we still have a tendency not to value education at the forefront of what we're doing. Because at the end of the day, I'm a firm believer that, you know, we'll talk about players in a second. There's an incredible amount of potential out there. But like all potential, if it's not massaged and not moved in the right direction, it's just going to be potential. It's not going to produce fruit. And so for me, incredibly important period in our time. I'm a big fan of wanting our country to find more commitment to mandatory education at age levels within the system. And also when you look at the CPL, this is going to give opportunities, which is part of the whole vision of the CPL. It's not just about players. It's about coaches. Mm-hmm. It's about professional management. It's about administration. It's about refereeing. It's about creating, you know, business and cultural opportunities for everybody who wants to be in the industry of football. And that is something we have lacked in our country for many, many years, bar the you know, the MLS groups that we have existing in our country.
Right. And I mean, I don't think an argument, it would be an easy argument to make that the MLS teams and, of course, the Fury and FC Edmonton in its previous incarnation have made positive contributions along those lines, right? Like, you know.
Absolutely. And you know, Robert, to be honest, you know, I applaud those groups that have been in existence over the years, who have on a consistent basis tried their utmost to be part of the football culture in Canada and tried to, you know, push the game forward and tried to be involved in this process. And it's been very difficult for them. And, you know, you have to take your hat off to a lot of people and some who are not even in the game anymore, who invested money, time, mm-hmm. you know, blood, sweat and tears. They're not maybe going to see what they were doing that assisted getting to the next level. But yeah, absolutely.
You know, this is maybe taking us in a different bit of a trajectory than I have on my list of questions. But do you think that, I mean, I know that there's the... I'm not even sure how to put it. There's a bit of a tension between the MLS teams and perhaps some of their fans or proponents, maybe some of their staff, and what the Canadian Premier League is supposed to be and become. And I know as a fan and as somebody who, you know, is involved with the Voyageurs and whatnot, that tension plays out in terms of, you know, maybe higher level of support for Canadian Premier League amongst Voyageurs. But do you think, you reference the culture of football, do you think that having more fans, more people that don't even know that they're fans yet, on this same kind of learning trajectory in terms of culture of football might actually help the MLS teams out a little bit, simply because, and vice versa, simply because it's just a numbers game. There's just more teams playing more games and it's more visible and it becomes a bigger thing for everybody.
Yeah, I do. And I think there is a little bit of a misnomer out there that, you know, the MLS clubs had this sort of negative opinion about a Canadian professional league or the CPL itself. I think you have to look at, you know, human nature And if you're the only guy on the block that's got a shiny toy, you know, it's really fun to have it. And right. then all of a sudden your neighbor gets the toy and you're like, well, gee, I thought I was the only one with the toy. And you know, it might be a cheap analogy, but I think in the beginning, I think they were like, well, you know, what's going on? You know, you're coming into my territory. And there was this sort of, you know, very protectionist sort of idea. And I don't think it was that, you know, strong, but it certainly was there. Mm-hmm. I'm a big proponent, again, about the value in the foundation of football in the country and what it is going to do to assist everybody involved. Including MLS, because let's be perfectly frank, the Canadian Premier League is not going to, you know, kick a ball in 2019 and be at the standard and the competency level of the MLS. It's just not going to happen. And everybody has to be comfortable with that. That's not a negative comment. That's a reality. And we need to find, you know, we need to find our footing to build from. So when people look at football and are enjoying it, they will transfer their interest over to the next club. It happens all over the world all the time. And that mm-hmm. and that is exactly why this is the most important project, in my opinion, that Canada can be undertaking, is because they are now going to be seen as a legitimate football nation that has infrastructure and its own domestic league that might feed another level. But that is how football functions everywhere else in the world, and we have not been functioning like that. So I think they're going to benefit. I think football in general is going to benefit.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm looking forward to the benefits, selfishly yeah. speaking, right?
Totally.
I mean, the only issue for me is that the Saskatchewan team isn't quite there yet, but that's a topic for another day. Can we go back to some of the things you experienced with the men's national team? And When I messaged you about this, I know that this topic has been done to death, and it is a little bit obvious, but I just want to get your thoughts out on it, regardless. And that is, you know, you had some. There's no doubt that the men's national team has some incredibly talented players. I think the narrative is that they succeeded despite the system rather than because of it, or, you know, but some people clearly got some good coaching along the way too, but it's not necessarily a system that's set up to, as it is now, before Canadian Premier League happens and all that kind of stuff, to be this kind of escalator to higher level soccer, and it's churning out lots of players, and, you know, it's not like some of the places, well, I mean, you were talking about the World Cup, like Croatia, where they seem to, you know, it's something that they do. Can you talk about your view of that national deficiency from what you were experiencing with the men's team program, with the Canadian men's team program?
Yeah, I look at it. I think the core element here is opportunity. As it relates to our Canadian players. I mean, I'm incredibly pleased with a number of people that I worked with over the years of the men's national team who, you know, sacrificed a lot to be involved, but also were also professionals and were rewarded for that. But the work they did was extremely important, and it's put us in a position here that might benefit not just the future level of men's national team programming, but also the CPL, and that was trying to find opportunities for these players to play, because at the end of the day, that is exactly what is going to enhance you know, the overall structure, but also the end result of what the men's national team is. You know, the national team program at the highest level, you know, is really an evaluating system that then launches the player into the next level. And we need more competition in those levels for those players to be seen and those players to move through the system. And, you know, our biggest problem was minutes and also competition. Where were the players playing? How often were they playing? And who were they playing against?
Mm-hmm.
So even with the introduction of the CPL, you know, the hope is that somebody will be seen and moved into that level. But obviously the men's national team and the national federation want those players playing at the highest level they can. So if that is one of the stepping stones to the next level of play, whether that be MLS or that be a European or South American or Asian league or wherever they end up, because let me tell you, Canadian players are playing all over the globe. Their passion for the game drives them to search out the game wherever they can, you know, by their profession. So that is, I think, the critical area. And there are, I think, things that this entire, you know, movement, CPL, the men's national team's deep list getting much longer and much deeper than it's ever been, moving into its next phase of League of Nations activities and potential Gold Cup and moving forward. So hopefully all of that backfill has done well for both parties.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you referenced, the deep list there. So let's go deep into the deep list for a second, maybe. Could you explain a little bit more, you know, at the end of your introduction where you were talking about what you're doing now? You mentioned you're doing some contract work for the Canadian Premier League, and I don't think it's any surprise to anybody that's been following the league trajectory that the next step has to do very much with, okay, we've got our teams, we've done some sexy, splashy launches and some great videos and had some events, and there are people buying memberships and those kinds of things. But there's also the actual league and its operations, how players get plugged into teams, how the teams figure out who their rosters are going to be and their coaching staffs, and all of those things are going to have to start to happen. And we're already seeing some announcements in those regards. So could you talk a little bit about what your job is with the league right now?
Yeah, the process really is, you know, Jim Easton, who is the director of soccer operations, the CPL, has been working, you know, tirelessly and very diligently behind the scenes for a long time, because, as you said, the league itself, first initial step was really to aesthetically, you know, show people that, you know, this is a tangible idea. We've got a vision. We've really got a story to tell. I think they've done an incredible job on those. Peter Shad, I don't know if you know Peter Shad. He's a great storyteller and a mm-hmm. great football guy, and him and the crew that they had working on it have done an incredible job to tell those stories. And while that was all going on, you know, you've got a number of people, and Jim specifically leading that, trying to organize, where the rubber meets the road, which is exactly what you said. You know, what are these teams going to look like? At the end of the day, people want to know about the football portion of it, even though, as you well know, being in business and being around for a number of years, you know, how to structure something. I liken the CPL to a startup. It's mm-hmm. it's literally starting from an idea, and whether that idea, you know, exists everywhere else in the world, and people say, well, of course it's, but in Canada it didn't. There was a couple of runs at it over the years, but in general it was just an idea and a vision of what we wanted football to look like, and there was so many people, Victor Montagliani being, you know, sort of top of that chain, because he was in that, you know, in the power seat, as they say,
right.
saying, you know, what does this look like and what are we going to do? So the people involved have done an incredible job on that, and now you're right, you're moving to that point where, okay, what are we going to do? So right now, from my perspective and what they've asked me, and from a consulting basis, is to assist them with that, you know, identification and assessment and organization of Canadian talent and Canadian players, and in doing so, work through engagement with people on the ground who are working with these players on an ongoing basis, where they are, what level of competency they have, and try to get everybody, you know, again, participating in the idea of pushing, you know, the specific players into a level of competition that they should be at that moment in time. The next steps will come a little bit later. They are slow, but behind the scenes and certain things will roll out here in the next little while, of how then the next steps will be made in terms of how those players are distributed. And I know people talk about drafts and they're talking about all sorts of things. And that's great to have those conversations, but those will be communicated to the public when they're in a much more solid and part of the overall strategy in terms of what the next steps are.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, obviously this draws on your experience with BC Soccer and how that would look if province to province as well, right? You've got databases of players So here, now, I mean, this, I don't know if this is a fair characterization of what you're doing, but it sounds very much like you've just linked something that you said earlier in what we were talking about and this job. So in a way, the job that you're doing could be characterized as a realization, a tangible realization of the idea of opportunity that you referenced earlier. There was a bit of a lack of opportunity, and now this, you know, database list and what you're going through in your consulting situation is to up that opportunity for, I'm assuming, hundreds and hundreds of players.
Exactly, and it is also there that the league itself and the league's leadership team and visionary group, you know, want to make it very clear they're there to assist, and they want this to be a unified position. They want to be able to be inclusive, and they want all the clubs to know that, you know, they're there to assist. And, you know, over time, the evolution of the CPL in the next number of years will be vastly different than what the public sees or what the clubs see in the beginning. I'm not privy to all of it, but I know that they have this great vision of how it will roll out over the years. And I think that's where the Canadian football public has to be somewhat patient and know that, you know, you're not getting Juve versus AC Milan next week. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but that doesn't mean you don't envision yourself growing and don't envision yourself being the best you can be. And you only can do that by having a much more unified, solid group to help. So you're right in the opportunities that are going to be presented there. It gives hope to those players. It also gives an opportunity for the coaches involved and the technical teams involved, to have some assistance in getting to that first day, you know, which is not easy. It's not going to be easy. It's a very difficult pathway because there's a lot of work to be done.
I mean, it sounds to some extent like this is an attempt to realize that there are probably tens of thousands of players, potential pro players, that have fallen through the cracks over the years, and to fill those cracks as much as you can, and give, you know, like you said, a helping hand to the teams to discover those players that they might not be able to discover right now on their own.
I think it's all situational. You know, Rob, I think, you know, there's been so many people over the years, you know, saying, you know, the system is broken and, you know, it's bent and we've missed thousands of players, you know, and quite frankly, nobody knows if that's really true. Mm-hmm. And now I'm not saying that the system was perfect, because it isn't. You always need to work on your structure and your system and your delivery vehicle and your content, all the things you need to do. You have to do it. But on the same token, it is what we had at the time. And I think the people that participated in that and serviced that and supported that and did the best they could to try and drive it is exactly what we needed to do. And if there's anything that the CPL, in my opinion, if there's anything the CPL is going to do for me is to unify people to get involved with the process.
Right.
You know, it's easy to stand out there and chuck a stone. And you know, my point is, you know, what are you doing? What are you doing to participate? What are you doing to contribute? And how do you see yourself in this process? And for example, you know, I've been talking to lots of people because that's part of the mandate of what I'm doing right now. And the support and interest is incredible. And that they want to be part of something. And hopefully this also eliminates, you know, those what I call the black cloud theory, you know, that it's never good enough.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? It's what we've got. So I'd rather participate on the side of optimism and let's try and move things along. How slowly that may be, we don't know. Hopefully it goes quicker than anybody thinks, but let's all get together and sort of embrace this and find some way to enjoy the process along the way, and eliminate the negativity that has, quite frankly, held us back for a number of years in terms of making some of the decisions that some of these people have made and have taken a lot of chances and stepping out and putting their chin out there. So that's the way I see it.
Yeah. I mean, like summing up the whole situation in one word, opportunity, it seems like the opportunity to go and play pro seems like a game changer just in and of itself. Because suddenly, I don't know how many local coaches I've talked to and a few from across the country, and they the ones that are still the movers and shakers always had the same refrain. What do I tell my talented 15-year-old about where they could go in this game?
Correct.
And you know, when you have this giant base of players, you know, a lot of is made of how many registered players there are in Canada, right? There's more than any other sport, et cetera, et cetera. But then the top end of the opportunity of that to play at the highest level is so narrow. It's almost like winning the lottery. And that's all about to change with the league. Like it's totally. It's a major game changer.
Look, I'm going to tell you that over my years, one of the things that has always, I won't use the word annoyed, but it really disappointed me is the fact that, and you're probably going to get people, you know, raging after I say this, but is that I think the word grassroots has been overused in this country. And I think it's actually been a little bit of a cloak and dagger sort of situation where it was holding us back in some ways. We are incredibly well organized as it relates to youth football in this country. And you can go around the world and talk to numerous people, and they see what we're doing at youth football from an organizational point of view. Let's get that straight. Organizational point of view. They can't believe how many kids we get playing football, and girls and boys, both sexes. You know, they're like, wow, like, how do you do that? You know, they're really surprised. Now the opportunity presents itself as, what do we do with all those players that end up, as you say, in that next phase, you know, which was sort of the black hole.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, using it was exactly.
There's always a
where's
good,
the laugh track? Yeah, where's the laugh track?
Yeah, I need a little drum. Very punny of you. Very punny.
Yeah, good. But that's the area of football that was, because and this is where the CPL and the commitment to that is going to drastically change the environment. Because now what you just talked about that coach. That professional coach in a club, for example, youth club, or it could be even a volunteer coach, because you know those volunteer coaches will continue to be paramount to the success of the program. But now they can say, by the way, Bobby, you are now moving out of my environment into the next, because that's going to be the best thing for you. Because guess what? There is opportunity and a target for you to play professionally. So right there, that's the game changer. Because before that 15-year-old, he'd say, I don't know what to tell you, Bobby. You know, hopefully someone will see you and, you know, hopefully you'll get an opportunity or, you know, and off they go and they travel the world, the ones that are really passionate and really want to chase that dream. The other ones found themselves, you know, plying their trade in amateur football, university. But again, a lot of them didn't get an opportunity in terms of draftable opportunities, those sorts of things.
Right.
So from a big picture point of view, because the MLS clubs across the country have done a good job in terms of hot housing certain groups of players, right? So, and they've tried their best to move them into opportunities, and some of them have been very successful in doing so, in pushing players into their first team's environment. But again, you can't function in a country the size that we are geographically and the numbers we're talking about with only three professional clubs if you want to be a football country.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that just the, you know, the math of that seems quite obvious. There's
Correct.
Just not enough opportunities, period.
Correct.
And now all of a sudden we're going to have a whole lot more, which is brilliant. I mean, I can't wait, of course.
Yeah. And what it ends up doing, I think one of the great opportunities, and we're overusing that word a little bit, but I think it seems to be one of the key you know, sort of tag phrases to use. One of the other opportunities it's going to present here is, you know, we have a lot, we talked about the long list. There's a lot of professional footballers, not as many as some other countries, but we have a lot of professional football players who are vying their trade in all levels of the game in all countries around the world, in numerous places. But do we have professional footballers? And what I mean by that is the CPL is going to create an environment where these players are going to start with the leadership of these clubs and their technical teams, that they're going to start teaching players how to be professionals. They're going to teach them what it means to be part of a club and a system of play and a system of standards and the culture around the club. And that's incredibly important because that'll start to trickle down to the bottom, you know, and you'll start to see a higher degree of interest in learning and additional activities around the game. That passion that's going to come through from the parenting group who also see an opportunity that maybe their son is going to be a professional footballer one day. So, mm-hmm. All of that is going to help the players because a lot of our players in the past and that I've had experience with, need a more, regimented schedule in a professional environment, training, off field and match play. They had portions of that, but they could never put it all together because, again, here we go with that word, they didn't have an opportunity to do so. Mm-hmm. Now they will.
Right. Yeah, and if you don't have the whole kit and caboodle, you kind of don't have it, right?
Correct.
The just to shift gears a little bit, and I know this is a, you know, this has been the topic on, besides Canadian Premier League, in terms of Canadian soccer, perhaps this was the biggest story to come out in the last little while. So of course it's the whole Alphonso Davies transfer to Bayern Munich and all of that kind of thing.
Alphonso Davies. Who's
yeah.
He?
Yeah. Have you heard of him? Let me text you a few YouTube links. I might have a Guardian article link that I can.
Okay, great. Text you.
No, I mean, obviously, right. This has been a huge splash and it's gotten much more attention outside of just soccer circles, which doesn't always happen with Canadian soccer stories. Well, this certainly had a, you know, there's a dollar figures involved. I don't think that this is necessarily a one-off per se, but I don't think that it would be prudent to suggest that now all of a sudden this is going to start happening every year where we're going to have such a success story. But some of the parts of his story I think actually maybe translate quite well, much more broadly across Canada. You're building a Canadian player database. What do you think of the idea that there are fairly talented yet unrecognized players who, you know, haven't, I was going to use the opportunity word again. Let me try and get away from that this time. haven't been discovered, are playing mostly on by themselves in parks, can't afford to get into a club environment, haven't had somebody advocate for them. And that's clearly something that's a part of Alphonso Davies' story. Do you think there, we have a lot of diamonds in the rough in Canada?
Well, that's the one area that we probably compare pretty well to everybody else in the world. And what I mean by that is that there's probably a lot of very talented, yet to be discovered players in a number of countries around the world. But the difference between us at that point is their system that has been created, their structure and their pathway is recognized, it's supported and it's committed to. So the chances of some of those players, quote, slipping through the cracks, is a less of a chance there than it is here. So now we look at the fact that, you know, certainly those players do exist. I agree with you regarding Fonzie. You know, he is a special one in the sense that I'm not sure, as you say, you're going to get one of these announcements every year. Mm-hmm. And I think most people who understand football and appreciate football, they get that. But Fonzie's journey also is a really great poster boy for being part of a recognized at staircase approach to football. And if you look at his journey, how he came through, my expectation would be that other players, maybe not of the competency level that Fonzie's at and the opportunity and all the things that come along with it, including a price that that Bayern looked at and paid for him, but look at his journey and look at the staircase approach that happened and where he started, where he went, the coaches involved and the technical team involved in each of the levels that he was at were completely committed to assisting him moving forward based on the highest level of competition that he could play at. And he went out of the Edmonton area and moved his way into a professional environment. And now he's made that next step. So if you wanted to categorize what we'd love to see in Canada, in my opinion, my personal opinion, that is exactly the journey I like to see for other players. Now, those players may not end up at Bayern Munich, and they may even not end up in another professional league beyond the CPL. But can we build those stairs to get them there? So that's the real story for me is to make sure people understand that the importance of being involved in the process and buying in to the process to help people. Because, you know, if the stair's too large, you can't get up to it. Mm-hmm. I know, again, using mm-hmm. cheap analogies, but if the stair's too large, you can't get there and people never get up there to see the view. So what do? We build a few more stairs. So if you just said, forget it, I'm going to go find somewhere else to get my view, well, all the best to you. So that's what, again, I'm a big proponent of infrastructure and pathway. There's always going to be opportunities for players to exist and who haven't been seen. The key is, can you bridge them into the stair wherever you find them? Mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, because they could be playing, let's say they're playing a senior level of football somewhere across Canada. Well, that means, okay, yeah, they weren't seen at the youth level per se, but guess what? Our system now with the work that a professional club can do with scouting and with some sort of technical leadership finds that player at that level and pulls them in. Before, you couldn't pull them in because there was nowhere to pull them into, so they would just float away into the abyss.
Right.
So,
right.
That's the way I see it. And the Fonzie scenario is, as you say, somewhat of a surprise to, I think, a lot of people who were not around him. I think most people that had the opportunity to involve themselves with Fonzie, whether it be from a coaching perspective of or got to know him as a person, they did see that potential, and a lot of them are not that surprised that he is getting this opportunity.
Right.
I myself completely agree with that. I got the opportunity to work with him in a moment of time. And when my moment of time was around him, he was incredibly impressive, both as a person and also as a footballer, you know. So
I mean, like you referenced earlier, there's a level of professionalism that comes along with being a professional footballer, being able to do the day-to-day, you know, train every day, get high level competition, yada yada yada, and seeing somebody that can make that jump must be pretty interesting. I'm sure there are incredibly talented people that just can't be professionals, and likewise, there are players that maybe seem mediocre on the pitch but would make excellent professionals. And it's those ones that can make the jump to being a professional that need to be unearthed to some extent, I think.
Well, absolutely. And I think there's stories, and football is not alone. I think all professional sports around the globe, there's multiple stories of players who said, boy, you know, he or she was amazing. They had unbelievable talent, but, you know, they were just missing something, or they weren't mm-hmm. committed, or, you know, or they took the pathway of not being as professional as they needed to be. Whatever the story was, there's stories like that out there. And, you know, no doubt, you know, we'll continue to have those in the future, but hopefully, you know, as we start to sort of gain some momentum and there, you know, people are being galvanized in the direction we're going, ultimately, you know, you limit those stories.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. So let me throw out a couple of hypotheticals to you. Well, one's actually not so hypothetical. One's maybe a bit more practical, and then the second one will be hypothetical, and then I'll let you get back on with your busy day. so because you guys are building this list, and I know there are some Canadian Premier League mechanisms by which players can register with the league, et cetera, et cetera. But let's say, you know, you're the parent of a couple of kids. You've had them in reasonably high level soccer in whatever community you happen to be in. They're wanting to be professional footballers. That's what they want to do. They take every opportunity to train. When they're not out on the pitch, they're in their backyard, you know, they're making up their own training sessions, those kinds of things. They eat, live, and breathe soccer. I'm not speaking of this completely hypothetically, because I do know a few people that are exactly like yeah. this, right? Yeah. Who are just, you know, rabid for the idea that they've now got this professional opportunity. What do you think is potentially the best step they could take at this point to showcase, get noticed, yep. connect? Yep. I'm not sure what yep. the word is, but what do you think they should be doing?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, I mean, you know, all players should be trying to ascend to the best possible environment they can. And they need to do that, you know, with the support, obviously, of their parents and the technical people that are around them. They need to drive themselves as hard as they can to be in that environment, whatever that environment may be, but it must be at the highest level, potentially, based on your competency, obviously. Mm-hmm. In terms of you know, the upcoming environment of the CPL, I think they just have to be patient at this moment in time. I know that's probably not a word they want to know and want to hear at this point, but I think the CPL and their leadership team are being very strategic in the way that they will release information and release direction and what their strategy is around these players. You know, nobody is, I believe, getting any sort of advantage in any way at this moment in time, because at the end of the day, even the largest, you know, database you could create, that's a living, breathing document, and players can be added to it at times at any level, per se, if they're seen and scouted. So there's a sense of patience that has to be there. They must continue to be committed to whatever level of programming. I think the idea of them submitting, you know, their name and information to the mechanism the CPL put in place is very good. What I can tell you is that, as I mentioned earlier, the whole engagement idea with the people around the country, you know, the CPL and my role right now is about making sure that we get as much information as possible about these players, but to use it and communicate it through the people that are affecting them. So I think they just need to be aware of what's going on. And as I say, from a CPL point of view, I think they will, you know, ultimately, you know, they use that word tryout all the time in these areas. I per se don't necessarily love that word, but you can be assured that there will be moments where there's going to be assessment opportunities put in place, nothing official at this moment in time. And the CPL will be responsible for sharing that. But those types of activities, I'm sure, will come. And some of the players, you know, certainly when you're talking about the youth player, you know, that player that's sort of aspiring to be there, again, it really is about being part of where the best players are playing at this moment in time. You know, you need, that's the most important thing that they can do. So within their community of football, where is that? Make sure that the program or the teams or the coaches know about them, and they need to strive to be in that environment, because that's where it's all going to get tied together, hopefully, down the road, like one big bow. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? So there's a process. There's always going to be stuff happening outside that process, but as I told you, they have to be open to bridging those players in at that moment in time. But I think it's about being in the best possible environment they can.
Right. So maybe a little bit of foreshadowing there, not to put too fine yes. a point on it.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's you know, obvious to anybody that's been watching that, and I know I referenced this earlier, that the types of announcements are changing over towards more operation style announcements. And so not only coaching staffs and technical staffs and office staffs and those kinds of things that are being put together by these seven clubs across the country, but obviously the player base and how that's going to happen, how those decisions are going to be made is going to have to start happening soon. I don't think, I'm
absolutely,
you know, saying anything. No. Yeah. I mean, there's limited time, right? They got to be kicking the ball in April of 2019. So,
and I think people have to also appreciate that one of the great targets for the CPL is to raise the standard of professionalism in the country, mm-hmm. which come, you know, when you're doing that, that comes along with, you know, building infrastructure. It also comes along with responsibilities. And the CPL at this moment in time is trying to establish high standards and in terms of how they do things. And I think their policies of release and communications have been great. And I know the good news is people are like a rabid dog right now. You know, they want more. Give
Absolutely.
Me the bone. I want, you know, and I'm telling you, that is fantastic, because what that means is, you know, are we actually finally, unearthing a Canadian culture around football where everybody is going to start expecting and not just dreaming. And so that's a good thing. But on the same token, as any startup business or a development or anything like that, it takes time, and people have to be a little patient. And I think they have to understand that every time the CPL, and again, this is a personal opinion, every time I've witnessed the CPL, they've done it in a very strategic manner, in a very high standard and professional way. So they're going to continue to look to that be their beacon. You know, they want to keep doing that. So they're just going to unilaterally, you know, throw things out and see how it goes. They want to make sure they make some good, solid decisions as it relates to how they move into the next phase of this, which is definitely going to be focused around operational and around technical build out.
Right, for sure. Okay, so here's the speculative one, or the kind of pie in the sky dreaming one to some extent, or whatever, however you want to characterize that. So imagine for a second, like, this is actually something that popped into my own head months and months ago when I was just, you know, whatever, in a moment where I was just thinking to myself, who, you know, like, all these clubs are going to need technical staff, coaches, assistant coaches, general managers, those kinds of people. There aren't a lot of Canadians who already have a built out resume with tons and tons of pro minutes coached. Right. So,
right.
Because of your involvement in the national team, you've had some experience there. And several of the people that have been hired across the country also have similar experience. It's maybe the most natural launching point from which to start that journey. So imagine that, okay, your consultancy's over for a second, and now you're a head coach, or you're a GM, or you're helping direct the fledgling technical steps. If you're fledging, you wouldn't be taking steps, you'd be flying. But anyway, so I just blew up my own metaphor. But you're flapping your wings for the first time. You're about to take this club forward. Yep. And I also know from what you've said in the past and whatnot that you're a pretty strategic thinker when it comes to those things. So this must have occurred to you before, and you must have some kind of idea or strategy as to what you would like a club to look like. What do you think your first steps would be if you ended up being the GM of a Canadian Premier League or the head coach of a Canadian Premier League team?
I think most importantly, from my perspective, is you need the right team around you. And I'm not necessarily talking about the players at this point in time that would evolve. But I mean, I think you need a vision, and you need a vision that is going to be delivered by, you know, a strong group of people who, given the realities of what the CPL are, you're going to need people that have a skill set that is not just one-dimensional. In the early days of this league, you're going to have people who can do multiple things as it relates to, you know, the team, both on the field, the support of that, and the back room. So I think first and foremost is establishing that. What that vision looks like, and establishing that leadership team around it. I also think that when you look at the competency level of the potential player out there, it'll be very interesting. Obviously, you're going to have your ups and downs, And I think people have to expect that, you know, the level of play will be very hit and miss, I think, in the early days until the league gets its feet. But my most important thing in my world is standards, and I think we need to start establishing professional standards, you know, top to bottom. And if you want to be successful, I think we need to look at some of the best practices around the world. Where, you know, these teams as they move out, you know, they're not going to be, you know, massively huge European power clubs or MLS clubs or South American clubs, but that doesn't mean you can't set standards on the same level, given what you have to your disposal. So standards would be another one right through, because for sure, you know, we need to understand this is the key to the whole premise is professionalization. You know, we've got a game that's existing in Canada. We have a game that's delivering activity. It's also delivering high performance at certain levels. It's delivering players into pro activities and national teams. But we definitely have not professionalized the game like other countries have in the world. So that, for me, that's around it. And then I think it's a connection of you know, the group, you know, having aspirations and commitment and building a culture around the club. You know, the most successful clubs I've ever been associated with, meaning when I go to watch players play or I go to assess players or I go for work experience, which I've done in the past, and the most successful ones have a core culture on them. They live and breathe for the same goal, whether it's the first person in the door or the last person off the pitch at night. You know, they all have a core aspiration and they want to support the culture. So those would probably be the main things I would add. Now, you know, I haven't even talked about players or those types of things, but I think that's where we're at this point, that then you'll start to populate the teams with players who you'll find out. Some of them won't be able to share that vision. Maybe they don't want to. Some of them will be seen to finally decide that maybe I don't want to be a professional footballer. This is not what I thought it was going to be. So you have to go through that sifting process. But in terms of the original, the beginning, that's where I would be focusing on.
That's interesting. Is there just one very short follow-up to that? Is there something that you've seen in the world somewhere in terms of a pro set of standards that you would say is maybe at least a close template that you could kind of adopt?
That's a good one.
That you really like?
I mean, in terms of I liked some of the countries that, and you mentioned Croatia, some of the countries like Switzerland and some of the countries like Belgium, I really liked how they connected both their national federation and their professional domestic league. They saw the opportunity that they could do something special, and everybody would benefit from that. I like that sort of idea. I think that one of the great challenges that we've always had is our geographical challenges. Mm-hmm. So I think it's incredibly important, and I think what I've seen in terms of how the rollouts of the CPL clubs have gone, they definitely have regionalized those visions, which I think is incredibly important also for the relationship with the technical people within those regions, because it's a very difficult scenario to think of going, even though the CPL has created a coast to coast picture. It's an incredibly difficult situation for a player to go from coast to coast, or that coast being aware of another player on the other coast. So, so there's challenges there. And I think regionalizations is a very important a part of this process. And that's why it's important to have that staircase approach that everyone's sort of pushing to the end. And I include the MLS clubs in that, you know what I mean? They're part of that process in terms of some of the players will, you know, be seen and they'll get an opportunity to go here. And the nice thing is that a club will be able to produce a choice for the player too, right? So mm-hmm. if an MLS club turns around and says, you know, Rob, we really like you and we really think you're capable of contributing to our success. But then a CPL club says, we also have that vision for you. Well, now the player can say, okay, what might be best for me in my career? Before, it was only one choice. And that choice was to go in that direction, which gave you the best possible professional opportunity. Now you might get two, so, or three, you don't know. So that in itself, but I think those, I really believe I've always been a big pusher of regionalization in our country. I don't think we do enough of it. I think we need to do more of it. I like the idea of you know, the infrastructure of the youth development program. You know, I'm going to lean on BC Soccer because I was involved with that, but how the BCSPL connected vertically with the Whitecaps Academy program, and how it connected to have us a step in between the BCSPL and the MLS. So there was an area to continue to sift through players, because, you know, their maturation levels are so different. Mm-hmm. I'm a big believer that model should be dropped into every province in Canada. Ontario is doing it. Quebec is doing it also to a certain extent. But I think every province, and whether you combine the two provinces because of the logistics on the East Coast or maybe in the prairies. But I really believe, you know, that is a really great model to make sure the players are moving vertically up into those areas. And if each one of those areas also has a CPL franchise within that region, well, now there's your natural opportunity. So, you know, so modeling, as you just asked me, yeah, something like Switzerland's done that. They've done a very good job in that. Germany did it early in their early days when they had their talent identification program, where they regionalized Germany, which was thinking about that, like, what, you know, like, it's, you know, you could fit Germany in a small portion of one of our provinces. So,
right.
And, Belgium was very specific. And I spent some time with the Belgian staff and development staff. And after, you know, they saw their failures in the early 2000s. And they literally, first and foremost, started at the coach education level. And then they saw what did they need to do? What was the best thing for the player? You know, and again, I think that's what we need to be driving to. Everything we're going to do now, whether you're involved in a amateur club in Saskatchewan, Manitoba, or Newfoundland, Labrador, as a coach, as an administrator, whether you're moving to the call, whatever you are doing, whatever participation you're having, whatever influence you're having, is your first thought is my next step or decision what's best for the player? Now, that might sound very romantic and euphoric, and people are going, oh, come. But I'm telling you, the ones that can get their head around that's the game changer, because then you really start to make real decisions that are moving players and giving them opportunities and the game's better, you know. And hopefully, you know, as I say, that's a bit of a optimistic view, but I'd rather live on that side than, as I said earlier, on the black cloud side.
Right. No, it's, I mean, I don't think anybody could characterize it as anything less than a very fascinating time in the sport in this country. There's more happening now than, certainly since I started paying close attention, you know, like maybe in the 80s and early 80s, late 80s, early 90s, when the old Canadian Soccer League, there was some stuff going on there, but we've come through a very, very protracted, well, I don't know, period of darkness might be a little bit I'm not sure what the word is, but, you know, I mean, there's just so much going on and so much to talk about. And I know people are incredibly excited.
Well, and I completely agree with you. And I'm telling you right now, this is a watershed moment for football in Canada, because this is the point where there's going to be some hard decisions have to be made, and people are going to have to decide, you know, where they want to be in the game. As I said, are you going to be, you know, are you going to be on the side of good, or are you going to be on the side of evil? You know, kind of comic book it for a moment, right?
Right.
But at the end of the day, you know how exciting that is, and how enthusiastic I've seen people in terms of now they've got something to talk about. They've got something that's pliable. They'll all have their different decisions, but at least we're actually, you know, discussing and doing. And I'm really hopeful that it all sort of, you know, comes together, that, you know, because most of the people that are involved right now in and out around the game, to be perfectly honest with you, probably will not be part of it when it really bears fruit. You know, they will be there and they will be enjoying that product at the end. And hopefully they're able to look back and say, you know what, I did A, B, and C, and that was part of the process to get us to where we're at.
Right.
And what I say to people out there that have a tendency right now to have a little bit of bitterness because they've sort of missed it, so to speak, in some ways, is to say, look, you did something earlier that got us to this point, right? Everybody's participating in somehow in it moving. This may be a slow moving boat, but at least it's sort of moving. So hopefully they're able to still support and contribute and be enthusiastic about the process. But in the end, it's what you do now that's going to affect us tomorrow, the next day, the next week, the next month. So let's make sure those decisions are really positive. They're well thought out. They're strategic. They're professional in their nature. They're researched and they're delivered with the highest possible standards and enthusiasm.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I mean, this has been a fascinating conversation. I really appreciate your time. I would love to be a fly on the wall to just, you know, see what some of the operations things are going on. Maybe that's not as sexy as some of the team rollouts and whatnot, but the nitty gritty, the getting down to the work of the league, I think is just as fascinating as all the rest of the stuff. So I'm pleased that you're involved in it. I wish you all the success with it moving forward, and we'll see where this thing goes.
Yeah, no, I think what you can, and everybody who listens to you and on this podcast knows that there's a lot of good people that are involved, and there's a lot of people putting a lot of time and a lot of effort into it. And as you say, it's a journey that I think everybody should enjoy as it unfolds, and I'm happy to be around it, and we'll see where the future takes it, and I'm just glad to be talking about football because a lot of times we don't, you know, we're talking about, you know, the Blue Jays. Sorry, all you baseball people out there.
I don't talk about the Blue Jays.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Unless I'm seeing one with my binoculars.
Exactly. So, you know what I mean? So, you know, that's the other thing is from a media point of view, this is also a game changer, because what you're seeing is you're seeing a dramatic rise in the discussion and the need for content. And you can be assured that the media is going, wow, we've got to get our ducks in a row here. So the public's going to benefit from that too, because there's more exposure and there's more information and there's more things to talk about. And, you know, and you know them out there. That's what football fans demand, is activity and opportunity to be included and support something or put their best foot forward, as they say. So I really appreciate you having me on, Rob. I love having the discussion, and I appreciate you taking the time out to put your effort into this.
Hey, this is fun for me, and I'm very lucky to be able to do it. So yes, thanks very much.
You bet.
And all the luck going forward. Let's we'll have to try and catch up another time as well, just to see how it all turns out.
Stay in touch, and great to talk to you, and we'll speak very soon.
And that brings us to the end of the 100th episode of From the Black Hole. Thanks for listening, and of course, thanks to Michael for joining us. Good luck with your Canadian Premier League work and wherever life may take you on your football journey.